Welcome back to Death Spiral No Anime, the only anime podcast based off of an obscure Japanese video game from the 90s. Looking around me, taking in the atmosphere. It's summer.
It's summer, and we've made the very summery type edition of the podcast where we sit inside and read manga, play video games. Just like every summer. This is our summer tradition.
I've been doing it since I was 12 years old.
Yeah, we do the traditional drawing of the shades.
Oh, I've got all the curtains drawn, all the blinds closed, lights are off, air conditioning is on, no dehumidifier because I want it cold and clammy in here, like, you know, some kind of squishy, slimy marine life. That's really the environment I tried to emulate.
The best time to go into a sauna is when it's really hot out.
I don't think that's true.
No, it's true. It's true.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have to ask a Finnish guy about that.
You get into the sauna and then you get out of the sauna right into the hot air. And that's that temperature difference is really good for you and your skin. And it's like a nice shock to the system.
Well, you know, presumably the hot air outside is still going to be colder than the hot air in the sauna. You know, the room made for keeping hot air in it.
For a couple more years, that might be true. For a few more.
We got like, what, three and a half?
Three, four more. Yeah. Until the equator reaches where I live. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be great.
The Earth is just a cylindrical tube floating in space.
Won't change the summer edition of the show, the traditional summer edition of the show.
Well, you know, it is a summer edition, you know, emulating my favorite, you know, Japanese fashion magazines. I am doing a swimsuit edition for summer.
Oh, good. Nice.
I am wearing, you know, it's kind of like imagine a European cut kind of swimsuit, kind of high waisted, but real right up against the groin. And it's kind of a bright yellow with that Bruce Lee black racing stripe down it.
Sure. And do you have like a semi-translucent, what do they call it, sarong?
I do, yes. Yeah, you know, kind of draped over my shoulders. Sometimes I can kind of fold it over and use it as like a scarf or a shawl, you know, if the sun's really beating down on me.
Sure.
People don't accessorize enough with their swimsuits. At least guys, you know, I gotta say.
Not guys. In anime, all the girls in the swimsuit episodes seem to have all kinds of crazy shit just like all over the place. None of it to actually cover up anything.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a little bit before, but it's like, you know, there's two types of swimsuit in manga and anime. There is the micro bikini, and then there is the like one piece with lots of frills around the shoulders and hips.
Well, then don't forget the classic school swimsuit that real freaks and perverts are obsessed with.
I don't see what's attractive or alluring about that. That's a uniform, you know, like a cop wears.
School swimsuits are basically cop uniforms.
It's true.
And much like all school uniforms, they must be destroyed.
I went to school, grade school, with uniforms. I do have to say that it is a type of psyop. It is psychological warfare.
Yes.
It is a form of torture. They're not cool. Nobody looks cool.
They're not cool.
Yeah. You know, depending on which teacher we had, you would get in trouble whether or not you had your shirt tucked or untucked. Obviously, I was an untucked kid because that's what all the cool kids were doing.
You gotta untuck.
Yeah.
Or else you're a teacher's pet.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, we're out here like in public elementary school with all the poor kids. And it's like a fifth grader comes to class wearing his Cannibal Corpse shirt.
Yeah. or I was going to say an ICP shirt or something like that.
Yeah. Where they're like nailing somebody to a wall.
Uh-huh.
And this is what I'm saying is good. That's a good thing. And Japanese people should do that.
Like disease, you have to build up a tolerance to culture. Like, you know, once I got into high school, coming out of 4 years of Catholic school with uniforms and the whole thing. It was like sending an unimmunized like native into the big city, right? You know, it's a shock to the system. I nearly died.
It was like putting you in space without a suit. Your head exploded.
I literally had no experience choosing clothes that look good and like cool and won't get me disrespected.
This is your anime protagonist thing. This is what really draws you closer to being an anime protagonist, is the immediate agonization of like having to choose your own clothes for even one day. I've never had that experience.
It was awful. You know, at the beginning of high school, freshman year, I was going to school with like a pom-pom beanie a la South Park and like wearing aviators with it and then shorts and like a fleece pullover. I was a fucking dweeb. Everybody knew it. Everybody could see it. Obviously, I never grew out of that moniker because here I sit today.
Yeah, you never recovered. That's true. But, the argument, of course, for the uniform that I've heard for weird anime defenders is, of course, the classic appeal to poverty, right? The everybody's equal when you're wearing that stuff. But you know what? That's not true.
No, it's not true.
It's not true.
You may say it amongst yourselves in your group, but everybody else who does have like self-respect and style and like a little bit of fashion sense, they all see you and they all judge you like pretty hard.
Well, kids are incredibly observant.
Oh, kids are the worst.
If everyone's wearing the same clothes, then they just come up with something else. Oh, you're wearing your tie in a double hitch. Wow. Fucking loser.
I feel very grateful that we didn't have ties as part of the uniforms. It was very basic polo shirt and khakis. That was the uniform.
Meanwhile, I actually chose to wear a tie to high school as my own particular fashion sense choice.
Listen, we all had growing pains around that age. Yeah, okay,
it's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's very hard. That it's crazy that I had to wear different clothes every single day, or I would get made fun of. You can't wear the same clothes every day. You'd be a freak.
Yeah. Yeah, your parents don't buy you clothes? What are you, poor? The answer is yes, you know, most of the time. Don't make fun of people for being poor.
Almost everybody I went to school with was poor. They still managed to wear different clothes. Or they would wear, actually, most of the people I knew would wear the same sweatshirt every single day, which was gross. But they would at least change their pants sometimes.
Now, I got into the habit. I fancied myself a hat guy, which obviously did myself no favors, but I kind of had like a green denim newsboy cap that I wore every single day for like the last...
A Kangol hat.
Yeah, a Kangol hat. Kind of. It had a button snap on it, on the brill to keep the lip of the hat material kind of in place that you can unbutton, I suppose, if you had a lot of hair.
Because it's terrible.
Yeah. I wore that every day of high school for a junior and senior year. I really was like in the back of my mind, I was saying like, all right, this is it. I'm going to make it. Finally, people are going to recognize my personality as the guy who wears the same hat every day.
I'm a hat guy, and now everybody's going to know me as the hat guy, and that's going to be my personality instead of the horrible person that is underneath the hat, who I desperately do not want anybody to recognize.
Yeah, it turns out that they didn't notice the horrible person, but they didn't notice the hat at all. They didn't notice me, like, at all. I did kind of never really break out of mob status in high school, which I suppose is, you know, a neutral ending. Could have been worse.
You know what? If you had worn the Naruto headband, at least they would have noticed you.
True. It did the Naruto run across the campus during lunch.
Imagine if you were a Naruto headband kid, but like also one of like the goth smoking kids. You walk up to one of the goth kids and you're like, "Can I bum a cigarette, Dante Bayo?"
Arigato.
I'm glad. Yeah, arigato gozaimasu. Well, I'm just over here sitting here with my my square watermelon ready to beat it with this aluminum bat and feast on the goo inside in traditional anime summer style.
You know, those square watermelons are a scam.
They're not square.
They don't taste good.
Oh
no, they're square, but they're all like rotten on the inside. Like they're shitty watermelons.
Oh, they're square, but they are rotten. That's a real shame.
You know, just like the underbelly of the anime industry, they are aesthetically pleasing, but rotten to the core.
That's how unfortunate for me. I was just about to bash this thing open. I guess I'm going to take the blindfold off.
No, you lose all the value if you bash it open. You got to keep it square, and then you put it on your nightstand next to your bed for good luck.
Well,
that's what they're
when
for.
I'm using my safety sparklers that I have to hold over a bucket. I guess I could just hold them over the watermelon instead.
You know, I personally can't wait to go to the local town cultural fair, you know, to watch the fireworks. That's my favorite part of summer.
With all the festival stalls selling
various
local
foods. Yeah, the food stalls and the games.
I
get to wear my traditional Washingtonian yukata. it's paisley.
Yeah. I'm going to be wearing my suit with tails.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And your big top hat.
my traditional summer festival growing up was a black tie affair. So I would wear my traditional cummerbund and
those were the days, sweating our asses off in the summer heat in fancy dress.
Yeah.
But that is not the only thing that summer brings around here besides square watermelon margaritas and dressing up in clothes that are far too damn warm for the weather.
Eating traditional corn dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
The traditional Japanese corn dog.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The traditional Japanese Krispy Kreme sandwich.
Okay, no joking, though. Those Korean corn dogs that have, like, cheese inside of them, those are fucking dope. Those are awesome. Those kick ass.
If you're gonna put cheese in anything, put it in a corn dog.
When we were in Harajuku, my wife got a corn dog, a Korean corn dog that had rainbow cheese on the inside. You think, you know, you want to do the Instagram kind of like pull it apart to see the rainbow goo kind of ooze out of it thing. It all just melts together on the inside, actually. So it kind of like oozed out as this greenish, purplish, grayish like ooze. Very, very disappointing. Just wanted to relay that if anyone else was thinking of possibly doing any other rainbow cheese related dishes in the month of June.
You're saying that is the square watermelon of county fair food. That's what you're saying.
Yes, and of Pride Month food.
I gotta say, much like the peasant Dorito, I feel like if you served some of our county fair food at like a Japanese festival, it would annihilate the population of a small town.
Yes.
It would immediately die.
It's an Oreo, but you deep fry it and then you cover it in chocolate sauce and whipped cream.
You see, you put the turkey leg on top of that. And then you put another one on top of the turkey leg.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up because I did see a video, like an actual, like, good faith video of this exact thing.
It's impossible. There are no good faith videos left. Nobody makes those.
Okay, well, I'm choosing to believe in my heart of hearts. You know, obviously this is the internet age and we're all cynicism poisoned and irony poisoned. But
it's true.
That aside, it was a Japanese person trying, like, basically Americanize Japanese mainstay dishes, like stuff that you see in a lot of, you know, California and West Coast sushi restaurants. One of them being that I'm sure you're familiar with. You remember deep fried ice cream?
Talk about a scam.
I know, right? That ice cream isn't deep fried. Just the batter is. It's just ice cream on the inside.
It's not deep fried.
It's the square watermelon of ice cream. But that was one of the items which, you know, I guess I never took the time to ask why all American, or at least most of, a majority of the ones that I've been to, American Japanese restaurants have deep fried ice cream as a dessert item, when it's like not something that is like a thing. That's not a Japanese thing. I'm sure there's places in Japan that do something like that, but like it was not invented there.
They don't deep fry ice cream over there.
that's not true.
Maybe this is connected because we also have the deep fried sushi roll.
Yes. And also that is a distinctly American thing. You know, if you want to get into it, what we call sushi as like a category has a very specific meaning of, you know, either nigiri or sashimi in Japan. And we kind of use it as a catch-all for the entire genre of dishes. But what we're talking about is a maki roll, a deep-fried maki roll, which, if you ask a Japanese person, is a Korean invention, believe it or not. So I think it's kind of a Spanish flu situation where everybody's just pointing the finger at somebody else.
Everybody's blaming somebody else. What about the sushi rito?
Oh, well, that is...
Where does that fall?
Oddly enough, that's Australian.
They are much closer to Japan than we are.
Another weird thing. I thought that as well, but...
Wait, is that not true?
No, it's not true. We met a fair amount of Australians and New Zealanders when we were there, and we always asked them, how long their flight was, because we were always surprised for them to confirm that it's about the same distance. Like, it's about the same flight time from Seattle to Tokyo as it is from Melbourne to Tokyo.
I always assume that's because those silly Australians do everything backwards, so they probably flew down and up back around.
Well, it's because they're a bunch of, you know, corrupt thieves, and they're all stealing the plane fuel. They're all siphoning plane fuels and stealing, ashtrays from the flight lobby.
Yeah, these silly reprobates.
Yeah, you know, you can't trust them. That's why we shipped them all to fucking Australia, where we were hoping the plants would kill them.
It's wild that they let Australians into Japan. I mean, just imagine the worst case scenario there. They stay.
Yeah. Bloody immigrants. Oh boy.
We hate them. We hate Australians.
Okay. Oh, we are getting them. So far off track. all right, I gotta say this. Hey, you know what else summer brings?
Not Australians. We don't let them in.
God damn it.
We're in the middle of massive anti-Australian demonstrations here in California. I don't know if anybody is following the news.
Oh, wait, is that what's going on in LA? They're trying to get all the Australians out?
Yeah, it's been crazy. Obviously, the state is pro-Australian immigration. That's why they're mowing protesters down with machine guns.
Oh, geez.
But we'll get them out. We'll beat them.
We'll get them back to that bloody rock.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. What I was trying to get at is also Summer Game Fest, right? That's good. That's politically neutral, right?
I don't know. I think I saw some Australian games mixed in there.
Well, putting aside the Australian games, you know, we do have some announcements that I'm kind of interested in.
Are they anime related?
Yes. By the strictest definition, yes. Because we're getting a new Scott Pilgrim game. How about that?
Oh, that's not
after anime. After 18 years or whatever, 15 years, we're getting another Scott Pilgrim game with Anna Monoguchi, with Robert Paulson involved, or Paul Robertson.
His name was Paul Robertson. Well, Anna Monoguchi did just launch that new album on tape, by the way.
Wow, really, really going for the retro on that one.
Yeah, they put it on tape.
Yeah, they've decided that, hey, vinyl's not cool anymore. We're going to do it on tape now.
People like tape. Yeah, they took a 2-second break from playing semi-pro Smash Bros. To finally record a new album. It's pretty wild.
I haven't listened to it yet. Have you checked it out?
No, not yet. I can't find my tape player.
You have to mail away for it, write the back of a magazine.
I'm afraid that when I do find my tape player, my old Golden Compass tape is just going to be stuck in there and I won't be able to get it out.
Oh, man, I remember that. Hey, people, check out the BBC radio play of the Golden Compass series. It was fucking awesome. It was really, really good.
go find your tape deck and listen to that. And the Lord of the Rings on tape is pretty good. This is all anime for 6-year-old Americans in the 90s.
Sure, yeah.
This is what we were doing pre-Toonami.
What else came out? That new Resident Evil 9. I'm going to say I'm kind of excited for. I was afraid that going back to Raccoon City was going to be stale and hackneyed and played out. I think that having it be set in post-nuke, like Mad Max Raccoon City with like futuristic desert apocalypse zombies, that's kind of an angle I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jigsaw's there for some reason. It's fucking awesome.
Jigsaw's there.
Jigsaw's there.
It's got the seal of approval, now featuring the character Jigsaw from the Saw series.
It's cool. Mm-hmm. It's really good. I mean, yeah. He finally died of his cancer, and then he came back as a super zombie. Wesker revived him using the super zombie serum, and now he's super Jigsaw. His traps are super zombie-powered now.
I mean...
Do I think Wesker is still alive? Yes, of course I do.
Well, of course he's still alive. He's sexy. You can't get rid of the sexy one.
It would be ridiculous to imagine that Wesker is dead after everything he's been through.
No, I was just musing on, I feel like it would be very, very hard to
kill
organize.
Wesker. Yes.
Oh, organize a saw trap in to the level of excellence that we're used to in a post-apocalyptic zombie wasteland. I feel like maybe the zombies would get in the way. They'd be hard to corral. They'd be hard to make, like, you know, cooperate, make them cooperate with the scheme and theme of the traps.
I think you're forgetting Resi 4, where the brain-dead villagers still managed to set up various pitfalls and rolling rocks and whatnot.
Fair enough. But, again... debatably, those weren't zombies. They weren't made with a virus. They had brain-controlling parasites that made them smart.
Yeah, that's... I mean, if you're woke, I suppose.
Listen, the point is there's going to be no woke zombies in this new Resident Evil.
You have to play as a woman in a Resident Evil game? God damn it. Go woke, go broke. I'm honestly not seeing that many anime games in this Steam Next Fest lineup. There's a regular crop of visual novels, and I already talked last week about the visual novel I'm playing, which is anime, of course. Got off that joke route finally. Back on another joke route. I managed to fall directly into another one.
It seemed so. Okay, in what is this? Barrier 100? Is that what it was called?
100 Line Last Defense Academy.
Same thing. I basically got the gist of it. What I'm wondering is, why are the joke routes so obviously set up as like punishments for the player for choosing the wrong answers? It feels like that is maybe... against the spirit of the game, or maybe it isn't. Maybe trying to discern an actual like real story from it is the gameplay.
Yeah. See, this is how I can really tell you haven't played a lot of these things. Some people consider these joke routes to be the kind of topping on the cake that is the visual novel, the frosting on the chocolate sponge that makes up the main story.
Sure.
Me personally, I could care less for them. I think I've made myself pretty clear on how I do not enjoy it and would rather just see the story play out. But people seem to really like it. For example, it's usually in the joke routes where you get all the fan service.
Okay. All right.
Not the only treat for the audience, of course, but one of the main ones. So in the last joke route, I finally escaped. That was the romance joke route where the main character has a dream about making out with three of the girls in the game.
Nice.
And then the choice routes are you do like a in the middle of this horrible alien invasion type thing happening around you. You do essentially a bachelor. You do the bachelor for these three girls.
You make these women fight for your attention and your heart.
Yes. And then at the end, you get to choose which one you like. There are two endings to that that I do enjoy. The one where you deny all three of them and the main character has a mental breakdown, which is a good ending. I enjoyed that. The other one is you try to date all three of them and they lose their shit on you and knock you out, which is, you know, that's fair. The joke route I've ended up on now is similar in that because you play the protagonist, who is, of course, the protagonist of life and reality in an anime game, he happens to take a drug that turns him into an incredibly charismatic person through the use of pheromones.
Man, I wish I had that drug.
Yeah, he positions us all as to increase team unity, you know? Mm-hmm. Everybody likes a charismatic leader. They're willing to fight harder for a charismatic leader.
Yeah, you know, he's the heart of the team. He brings us all together.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But what happens instead is that they form like a weird cult around the main character, and then he's forced to perform bizarrely sexual acts with everyone in the cast.
He's compelled to do it, or?
Yes. The setup happens to be that at first your commanding officer decides that the way to make this productive is to reward the other cast members with time alone with the protagonist if they fight well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they all fight as hard as they can, even harder than before, so that they can win the prize of spending time with you. And the time they spend with you happens to just be this very bizarrely double entendre style sexual activities, which is very uncomfortable and strange. And I really wish we could just get back to doing the story stuff. But now I'm locked in and I just have to see how this one ends. I've got about 11 endings in, so.
Out of 100?
It seems maybe about 100. It kind of seems wow. That way. So I'm slowly chipping away at it. I hope to exit this one and get back onto the main story soon.
Well, you know, in the meantime, you can always have Onimusha, Way of the Sword, to look forward to. That's a title. We're doing old titles again. We've got Death Stranding 2 on the beach. I know you're super excited for that.
I'm more excited for Onimusha. I don't know why you mentioned that one in particular, but I was very close to just downloading that and playing it instead. But I decided to just stick through it this one because I did pay real money for it. but I will probably get around to Onimusha. I am genuinely excited to play that game again. It's been many, many years.
I never played Onimusha, like, the first three. For some reason, I ended up with a copy of Onimusha 4 on the PS2 and played about half of it and didn't get it, I suppose.
Yeah, weird time to jump in, I know, to be honest. Yeah. Strange time to enter the series.
You know, and also it just had a adaptation, right? It had an animation adaptation on Netflix,
yes,
right?
Yes, a very, very loose adaptation. We talked about it at the time, but there were some upsetting quirks to that particular adaptation.
I'm trying to remember, what did they change about it? They've already brought Onimusha into the real world. That was the third one with Jean Reno, right?
Yes, that's a different one. Okay. That's a whole other weird thing. The main thing about the adaptation is that it just straight up is Miyamoto Musashi as the main character and Kojiro Sasaki as they're not the Shinsengumi, but it's like a bunch of people from the Shinsengumi just happen to be like incidental characters. And also, they just straight up did like a 3D digital scan of Toshiro Mifune and just used his likeness as Miyamoto Musashi, which is very strange.
The
very
whole legality
strange.
And controversy over scanning faces and voices into games, that's been going on a lot longer than the last couple of years. Definitely longer than Death Stranding.
Yeah. It's just a very strange choice, you know, and that's... Takashi Miike did that version, and he's usually not somebody you would associate with that particular kind of scummy behavior. You know what I mean? He does all kinds of other scummy shit, but usually not that particular kind.
Actually, I don't know. I kind of feel like I can, knowing the other stuff about him, I feel like maybe it's a little bit in character.
Yeah.
Well, I feel maybe he's a get the shot at any cost kind of guy.
It struck me very strange. I will say, you know, just since we're mentioning him, he is directing the Nyat of the Living Cat adaptation.
That's coming out soon. They just streamed the first 2 minutes of that the other day.
Yeah, yeah. A weird choice that he decided to do that particular comic.
I mean, I don't know. He does weird stuff all the time.
You're telling me he's doing the American adaptation of Audition right now and a sequel to Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Those are the two products he's doing at the same time as this anime, that's some wild shit.
That is so weird. That is a weird choice.
Very weird. Yeah. The man is making these constantly strange choices.
I mean, what I was about to say is that I have like this because of Audition and, you know, a bunch of his other early movies that I associate with him. I think of him as a horror director, but like he's not. He does everything. He does whatever he can get his hands on, it seems like, which is admirable.
He's prolific and kind of hope he doesn't stick around in the anime space. I feel like when he was doing the live action anime adaptations, that was a little bit more productive. I don't think we need him, I don't take it as the wrong way, but slumming it in the animation space. Hey, yeah, maybe the Night of the Living Cat adaptation will have some real gems in it. I'm not holding my breath though.
I don't know. I just like the concept. I'm definitely gonna check it out when it comes out. I have no expectations. I have not read the comic.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't know.
We've made our position very clear on zombies.
Yeah.
Even if the zombies happen to be cats.
what I was getting at is summer is about video games, obviously. And because I'm poor and don't have money and also aren't particularly excited about any of the games that got announced for Summer Game Fest 2025.
Absolutely not. And, you know, just looking at very casually looking at the anime tab itself, it seems to be, let's see, hentai.
Yep.
Hentai, asset flip, hentai, AI generated hentai. Wow, yeah, hard to get excited.
It's bleak out there, folks. It's hentai or Death Stranding 2 on the beach. Those are your two options this summer. Have fun with it. Anyway, I've been, as I always do in times of deep depression and, you know, personal moral tumultuousness. I'm playing Souls games again. I went back to Elden Ring. It is something that I've become incredibly good at, just mindlessly playing through. It's almost a meditative act for me at this point.
Oh, yeah. You're not even enjoying it.
Yeah, I feel nothing from
it. It's not even what it's about.
To enjoy something implies that I would desire to have it. I've rid myself of all desire while playing these games. In my Buddha-like state, I become more one with myself and the universe. That's the real reason I do it.
I think you're just purely dissociating.
You know, Marines are invading California. Time to play Elden Ring again. But I thought that I would at least try and step outside of maybe just that one mode of engaging with Elden Ring. you know, and so I decided to read the Elden Ring manga that has been publishing for the last few years.
Ah, yes, of course. Cross media.
Well, as I was saying before we started recording, I am a little goblin. I need my content. And when I've consumed my content, I need ancillary content to that content to keep consuming. Yes. You know, I
need... Let the treats flow.
Let the treats flow. I cannot turn the hose off without dying. So obviously this was the next step. And it brought up a, you know, before I even started getting into it, I started thinking about, like, the concept of manga adaptations of video games, which is something that I've seen, you know... this may belie my age a little bit, but I remember when you could walk into a store that sold books and they had like shelves full of manga. You remember that?
Oh, I remember even deeper than that. I remember when they used to have little anime drawings of the pixelated characters that in the manual for the game you were playing. And yeah. That's how you knew what they looked like.
Exactly. Yes. It's the reason Tetsuya Nomura has an entire fucking career. that one thing. One job that he started off in was drawing the little headshots of what the pixel characters look like. Now
they got the real guys like Amano to do the cover design.
Yeah.
And then they would bring in him to do the little supplementals.
Yeah. And so I always kind of had this conception of a video game manga adaptation as essentially a companion book to the game, something that is more or less like an extended section of those like little drawings and sometimes even little comic strips they would put in the game guides, right? Something that provides more context for the game itself. You know, I guess before I get into the Elden Ring manga, which I'm going to start by saying I think it does a really good job. It understands the assignment of what it's trying to do. I decided to go read a couple other manga adaptations of games that have been very dear to my heart, very influential to me as both someone who enjoys video games, someone who enjoys anime.
Okay, okay. That's funny because I did the exact opposite.
You read video game adaptations of manga.
No, I read manga adaptations of video games I either have zero interest in playing or actively despise.
Okay, all right. Well, that is an interesting take on it. I started off by reading something that I had seen in stores like a lot over the years, and that is the Ocarina of Time manga adaptation.
Sure. We're all familiar with the memes.
With the memes.
With the various memes.
First off, I think that as far as a relaying of the events of a game that basically has a story you can write down on a single page, right? It does its job of just showing those events happen again. The Ocarina of Time manga is split up into two volumes. First volume is Kid Link. Second volume is Adult Link. And it is essentially just a quick rundown of the events of the game, you know, with added dialogue and some scenes to kind of make the world feel a little bit more lived in and a little bit more like realistic, you know. Obviously, Hyrule Town Square isn't just going to have like five people standing around and a dog like running in circles. It's like a big city with lots of people walking around. But this manga adaptation already absolutely fails the assignment, does not get a good grade because it does the chief capital sin that everybody apparently does when they try to adapt a Legend of Zelda game into any medium that's not a video game, and that is they make Link talk.
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing that you can do. It's never been done well. Obviously, everyone clowns on the 90s cartoon, you know, excuse me, princess.
that's not the cartoon. That was the game.
No, there that was also the cartoon. The cartoon was more based off of the CDI games than the Nintendo ones. That's a thing.
Wow, I didn't know they had it in the show as well. I knew it from the CDI game.
It was in the show. It was almost his catchphrase. He said it like once an episode.
Jesus Christ.
They did not do him that dirty in this, but I think it fundamentally changes something about Link, who is not really supposed to be a character, at least not during that era of the Legend of Zelda games. You know, Link is the player. He is the player insert. He doesn't talk in the sense that we think of having conversations.
He's me. I'm Link.
Link is me. Yeah, he's a little guy that I control around, and he can say yes or no when people ask me questions.
It's me, I'm Link.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're all Link, you know.
I think it's me specifically.
Nobody else can be Link besides you.
No one else is me. I even look like him. That's what I look like, by the way.
Let's not flatter ourselves here.
I look like that. That's what I look like.
Yeah, I think you would be hard-pressed to find someone who would describe you as cherubic.
How dare you.
Hey, and so I think that is really the I think that's the end of it, really. I don't have a whole lot to say beyond that it was a dumb bad decision to make Link talk, because they make him like your generic kind of not sassy, but a little bit hot-headed, a little bit you know, outsider kind of main character, standard anime kid, you know.
Yeah.
He is a shonen protagonist, basically, in this adaptation with the characterizations they give him.
He talks
with Navi, which is kind of weird, which also they give Navi kind of like a Tinkerbell thing going on, where she gets like kind of like jealous of Link talking to other female characters. Like, she gets very,
oh, you
like...
You gotta.
Yeah, I mean, what else? She's a little fairy. Of course she's gonna Tinkerbell.
What else are they gonna do?
On top of that, they do give, actually, a little bit what I think is more needed character to Zelda in the manga, where they kind of make her more of a... what is implied in the game with its limited dialogue, but she's kind of like a, you know, Princess Jasmine type, where she's, you know, the tomboy princess. She likes to sneak out of the castle and go into town, and
she rides a tiger.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. She rides a big old wolfos around. It shoots ice breath at you.
She's Persian. It's actually a big change.
Well, you know, that Guy Ritchie, that upcoming Guy Ritchie adaptation of Legend of Zelda, that's going to be, that's really where we're going to see it, you know?
Yeah, he makes her white, which I think is just it's a really bad choice. It's not going to age well.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like, let me ask you this. If you were given the task of adapting a video game, like a video game into a manga, what do you think the point is?
The point would be to satisfy my contractual obligation while I'm busy trying to negotiate my true passion project, which is where that Legend of Zelda manga came from, as I did mention when I was talking about Kamudo, because the manga of Legend of Zelda is by Akira Himekawa, who's a Kamudo, is now running. And Kamudo is very clearly what Himekawa was trying to work on, because Himekawa's main character is Link. It's just the way, like, Kamado's character is just what they used for their Link. And the whole world has basically a very similar feel to the way that they interpreted that game. It's made very clear to me that they were just practicing for Kamado. And it paid off, because Kamado whips. Kamado's cool.
I mean, I can't I can't blame them, you know. Do what you can with what you got. Get the money, right?
Do what you gotta do, man. Get that money. Same reason why Kyu Hayashida did the Machin X Another manga. They were trying to get serialized for the first time and needed money. And these weirdos were like, we need a manga tie-in for this video game. And we just happened to find the person who's probably the least possible suited to making that in a manga tie-in. Q Hayashida, the creator of Dorohedoro. good manga. I haven't and never will play the game, but that manga's pretty good. Q is fucking rocking.
You present an interesting case in the whole thing. Yeah, someone who's read the manga and is never intending to play the game.
Yeah, no interest at all.
See, I don't think that is the main point of these. Obviously, the main point is to is to turn out content, you know, to tie in something that is tied into the brand so you get royalties off of it. That's point. But
that is the point.
If we're taking away the extremely capital cynicalist interpretation of it, you know, assuming that you want to be doing this job and someone has given you the task of adapting a video game into a manga, I would say, like, the point is, and this is just me, my own bias is talking, the point is to provide something that is, like I was saying earlier, like the instruction manual in the game, something that gives more context to, you know, stuff that cannot be conveyed the same way in the format of a game.
Sure. Yeah, recenter the perspective. Yes.
Yes. And that would be, you know, including the characters, but, you know, fleshing them out, maybe giving them a little bit more of an edge, not in the edgy sense, but just something for the reader to grab onto. You know, Link doesn't talk, so what are you going to do? Are you just going to have a mute protagonist who does everything through action, and you have a silent dialogue minimal story like Blame?
Yeah,
obviously that is the right thing to do. That is the correct way to do it. That's not what anyone does, though. They make Link talk because you have to have him be a little shonen anime boy to show that he's the main character and that,
sure,
and that he's the hero.
Well, I would say it's weird that you say that, because, like, by far, this project started off sort of like what you're describing. You know, one of the ones I've read, obviously, is like the adaptation of the first Final Fantasy game. Mm-hmm. And that is very much like, well, the pixel art of these guys on the screen is about, you know, 8 to 12 pixels. and the world is not too many more pixels than that. Why don't we create a version of that where people can actually interpret it as we see it in our mind's eye? But that is such a minority here. The vast, vast majority of manga adaptations or games are just redrawing a visual novel.
Basically,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Just making visual novels for people who don't want to play visual novels. That is 99% of these projects.
Yes, absolutely. That brings up one of the other ones that I read, which was the Kingdom Hearts manga adaptation.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Well, because I wanted to see, you know, it got me thinking, the Zelda one. Zelda has a very minimal story. I wanted to see what a manga adaptation of something that has
game that talks too much.
Yeah, of a game that talks too much.
Yeah.
That has a very rigid, linear, spelled out story. You go from point A to point B to point C to final boss, and that's the game. And you have lots of very verbose cutscenes in between. Like, there's not a lot of interpretation of what is said and done by the characters throughout the game. And so it turns out that the way you add flavor to something that is basically already laid out like that for you is to, like, really ratchet up the, how do I say this? Ratchet up all of the character traits of all the background characters in the background setting. And so now you have, you know, Sora waking up in Twilight Town at the beginning of the game, and he meets Donald and Goofy. But Twilight Town is now kind of like a Christopher Nolan, like Batman Begins, gritty slum town that has like a red light district. And
awesome.
One of the one of the first interactions that Sora has is seeing a prostitute that was soliciting him get turned into a Heartless.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. he wakes up in an alley, and again, this is, you know, a 12-year-old Sora. He is a child, and a voluptuous woman comes up to him and is like, "Hey, baby, come with me. I'll take care of you." And then she gets her heart ripped out by a shadow demon, with the, you know, implication being that because she was of impure heart and morals, that's why she got killed by a shadow demon.
Man, I love Kingdom Hearts. God damn.
It's
so smart and cool.
Hey, we haven't even gotten to the time travel subplot, man. You know, and also it feels like this one, because another thing about the Kingdom Hearts manga adaptation is that it came out 5 or 6 years after the game was released. The game came out in 2001 in Japan, 2002 in America, and the manga came out in 2007. And so it was not a straight, like, tie-in adaptation. It was a promotional thing created, you know, to hype up the release of Kingdom Hearts 2. And part of that is that there is, like, already this existing fan base for Kingdom Hearts. What I'm trying to get at is that they lean really, really hard into the shipping subtext between Sora and Riku. A lot of innuendo, a lot of stolen glances between those two. They were really courting a very specific demographic of Kingdom Hearts fan to buy the
exact
manga.
The exact opposite of me, yes.
Yeah, yes. I also have to give despite it being, like, definitely weirder and darker and dark in an extremely weird way compared to the game, which I think is kind of an interesting, like, angle to take on it, even if it, like, doesn't pan out in the long run. I think it's kind of it's something, you know, it's something besides just being something. You know, traces of the cutscene storyboards, right?
Yeah, if you want that, there are plenty of other versions of Kingdom Hearts that are just recounting the
yeah, you can find them on YouTube.
Details of that plot. You have to pay for them. There are full paid products that are just that.
Despite that, this does get negative points. It is absolutely awful by the fact that it was, for some reason, it was drawn in right to left format. And I don't like that. I don't appreciate that.
You mean left to right?
I do mean left to right. American. It was drawn for Americans is what I was
Interesting.
Saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. to the point where they put a, you know, they put a primer page at the beginning of the volume reminding the reader that this one is read like American books, not like other manga. It's read in left to right, which is atrocious to my eye. I tried to read it, and my, you know, I'm so used to doing it the proper way, the correct way. I kept reading all of the pages backwards.
Yes, like a good little weeb.
Yeah. But that brings me back, because those are two examples of, I think, are the wrong way to do an adaptation of a
sure.
game like this. So that brings me back to what I originally wanted to talk about, which is Elden Ring, The Road to the Erdtree.
Sure, sure. And you were saying this is pretty comparable to, like, the Far Cry 3 manga, right?
Yeah, yeah, very much in the same vein.
Yeah, sort of like adding sort of more layers to the rich lore and backstory to the game that we all know and love.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I was not expecting this. I went in knowing nothing about the Elden Ring manga. I knew that it was a thing that was going on, but I started reading it, and it's a comedy manga. Like, it's a straight-up slapstick comedy.
Oh, you gotta.
Yeah, you gotta. And the thing is that it's really funny. I think it's really funny.
That Far Cry 3 manga, not funny. It is
not funny, you know.
It is about Voss as a kid learning how to kill people. It's pretty grim dark.
You know, it goes in a different direction. We all know and respect Voss as one of the great video game characters of the last two decades, obviously.
Yeah.
People love that Far Cry 3.
He's very funny in the game, and they took it in a completely different direction.
You know, he's always talking about that insanity thing, and then he's always saying it twice. It's
a joke
he does.
He's making that joke. He's making a joke over and over again. And then you burn that weed field.
Oh, man. Far Cry 3 sucked. You remember that?
No, that fucking ruled. That was awesome.
No, the Elden Ring manga is a farcical, like, comedy adaptation of the game, which I think is obviously the correct way to go in a game where the main character you're adapting is less of a character than Link in Legend of Zelda. You're tarnished. Your character in Elden Ring is nobody. They're a literal blank slab.
Hey, yourself, man.
Hey, you're a nobody too.
Mine is a full-on Elden Lord.
Once everybody becomes Elden Lord, then nobody is. The Incredibles taught us that.
Yeah, but I didn't summon, so my world is untainted.
Oh, look at big man on campus over here.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so our main character is an amnesiac, obviously, who wakes up naked, afraid, and angry at everybody around him. And immediately what I figured out is that the main character in the manga is essentially someone who has never played a Souls game before. They they get dropped into the game with no experience, no idea what's going on, no context for any of, like, the vague, like, not even storytelling, like, vague lore and stuff that like characters mention, you know, in cryptic little quips and whatnot. Like, and so he's like a dude in underwear with a club, and he's like, what the fuck is going on? And it turns out that he is also the type of player that kills NPCs without talking to them, which is very funny.
Awesome.
It's super funny.
Love that.
You know, he walks out of the first dungeon and you see the white mask guy who calls you Maidenless. He's like, what the fuck did you call me? And he fucking kills him right there.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you know, it's treading this weird line where he is essentially a gag character, right? He is the ultimate player insert, you know, out of towner, essentially. And so all of the other characters that he interacts with from the game are playing it very straight. And in a lot of cases, basically just reusing the same dialogue from the game. But they have to react to this, like, childish, greedy, vain psychopath. And it's about the real story seems to be about Melina, who is, you know, the lady that shows up at the Sites of Grace, the campfires, to help you level up, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, stupid, listen here. I'm going to use these runes to increase your intelligence, and maybe that's going to make you not a horrible person that makes horrible decisions all the time because you keep dying.
Sure.
He's like, fine, whatever. And I really like that concept, you know. And on top of that, they are playing around with a lot of the other. Not every NPC character from the game is being played straight. You have, like, a bunch of the bosses take on super stereotypical, like, rom-com anime, like, archetypes. So, like, Godric the Grafted, who's the big Frankenstein, like, meat horror boss at the end of the first major dungeon in the game. Whenever he is off screen, not directly talking to the main character in like a cutscene that's from the game. He's basically a Gyaru who's like super obsessed with fashion and like is super upbeat and peppy and like always talking about teamwork and how he can accessorize, which I think is very funny.
Naturally. Yeah. That's my interpretation of the character.
Oh, really? You got to that one first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was how you're supposed to read it.
So, you know, without just recounting the stuff in the manga, I think that, like I said, this is one that really understood what it was trying to do. And that is be a supplement to the game that has like little tidbits of lore and information that, you know, are all that good meaty stuff that people like to gobble down on. But it's also definitely not taking itself seriously at all, which is like pretty much the only thing you can do with a game like this, right? You know, I think the other thing that I like about it that kind of ties into that is that the art style is very obviously trying to not only emulate the world of the game, but by way of that, also it is trying to be like a parody of Berserk's art style almost.
Sure.
And so you have these very seriously drawn, like super detailed characters with, and they're doing all the details on the armor and the clothes and everything, like way more effort than is called for, to be honest, you know. You know, not Miura effort, but, you know, somewhere trying to emulate it. And yeah, you have that, you know, juxtaposed to what are essentially like slapstick characters. It's Laurel and Hardy go on Lord of the Rings, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that's very fun and charming, and it's funny, and I like it. So I don't know. That's my case for maybe not always like adaptations and supplemental media like this is like not only a soulless cash grab. Like maybe sometimes you get somebody who wants to have some fun with it.
Slip it in there. Can I talk about the soulless that I am more interested in?
Yes. You can talk about it. Do your thing. All right.
Well, you know, just since you're talking about soul stuff and talking about how it's soulless and whatnot, something I don't appreciate. The haters and losers are constantly complaining, right, about Bloodborne not releasing on PC. And frankly, I could not give less of a shit.
Hey, I still own a PS4. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't fucking care. Like, stop complaining about that. You're stupid. That's a dumb thing to care about. Move the fuck on.
It's over.
The real issue is that they paid Kyu Hayashida to do that fucking Bloodborne illustration, which was the smartest thing anyone has ever done, and then did not pay her to continue the Bloodborne illustration.
Draw more Bloodborne so that it is also a manga.
Yeah, into an actual manga. That is the actual crime. Who fucking cares about a PC release? I need Kyu Hayashida to do the rest of the Bloodborne manga, because that is actually urgent and important.
I mean, the only thing that I would say is maybe a downside to that is that if Kyu Hayashida is doing a Bloodborne manga, they're not working on literally anything else that Kyu Hayashida could be creating, which almost certainly be better in every way than a Bloodborne manga.
I mean, yes, I do appreciate Die Dark a lot. I love Die Dark. Die Dark is great, but Die Dark is also already coming out like once every couple of months. If there is any way to like squeeze maybe one page of the Bloodborne manga into like a monthly release or whatever, I would be fine with that. It's just, you know, we talk about a incredible tease and then disappointment, just endless disappointment. The fact that people are crying about this PC release thing and not about this, it just really shows you how intellectually devoid video game droolers are about their own interests. Really, really pathetic shit.
It's true. And I think that actually gets to the heart of it, is that video games are, in fact, the inferior media. obviously.
Yeah, no, they should. Why put, you know, that is a, legitimately, there is a funny thing about the visual novel adaptation where, like, hey, wait a second, the manga are better than the, every almost every single time the manga is better than the fucking visual novel. Why would anybody bother making one of these fucking things when the manga is right there? I do not understand. Very, very strange choice.
I mean, all I can say is that it must be a lot cheaper to churn out the visual novel games than it is to hire an artist to, and a writer to do the manga adaptation.
Yeah.
I mean, you draw a couple of full body shots, a couple of like head close ups. You draw their mouth flapping every once in a while. You draw some sexy poses on the, you know, for the sexy ending or the funny ending. Boom, you're done. Then you just make text boxes like you and
I. Endless.
We could make a visual novel in like 2 days if we really wanted to.
Oh, and I have.
Yeah,
I've done it.
Yeah, no, we're like George Lucas. We made a bunch of small indie visual novels that we're just going to release for, you know, just for our own viewing.
Well, you know, my personal ethos is, of course, if you're going to criticize something, you should do it first. So I try to always do that first. You know, mine's not great, but it's still better than all these other ones.
And yes, we have made in complete Souls-like games, and that is what gives us the authority to criticize them this way.
Yeah, exactly. And my thing is, the visual novel is obviously just read the manga. What I appreciate is when they put out little one-offs of fighting game character stories. That's what I'm really interested in. You know, I want to, you know, the Tekken manga, that's good shit. The Street Fighter manga, when you're like, oh, I want to see fucking Ryu and Ken's backstory. That's the good shit. Why make any of this other shit?
Nobody gives a shit about fighting game characters. Sorry. I got to say it. Nobody cares about the characters. They are simple, you know, delivery devices for different movesets. You should make a fighting game that's just, you know, geometric oblong shapes clashing against each other.
That was Virtua Fighter. They already did that. They've done a bunch of those. You could not be more wrong. People are obsessed with these weird little guys. I mean, we've had, I think, four Mortal Kombat movies and two TV shows. We've had many, many Street Fighter movies, live action and anime. They've made Dead or Alive live action and anime movies. People fucking love these dudes. In fact, another Street Fighter movie is coming pretty soon, and another Mortal Kombat movie.
I am looking forward to that new Mortal Kombat movie. That looks pretty dope. I love me some Scorpion.
That last one came out, and it was pretty much... I liked every part of it except the like OC insert character. He was so bad and lame.
You know, everyone else was pretty cool. That was so weird for me because I when I was watching it, he totally stood out to me as like, oh, this character should have just been Johnny Cage. And then they set up Johnny Cage at the end of the movie, you know, with the poster. But it's like, why did you need to make up like Johnny American Marine, you know, generic insert man as like the audience point of view character?
I kind of understand because like if you're thinking of it from the screenwriter perspective, like you have to do a lot of work to Johnny to make him sympathetic enough for an audience to want to sit there with him for 2 hours. Like he is an asshole. that dude sucks.
He's Johnny Cage. He's a movie star. Of course he's an asshole. That's what makes him compelling.
An absolutely insufferable piece of shit. And that doesn't mean you can't do it. There are many ways to soften him up. One being that you start the movie with him being an insufferable asshole, and then he just gets beat to shit. Just absolutely wrecked.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they did in the, in the 90s movies. That was his character. But they also did the correct thing the objectively correct thing, which is make Liu Kang the main character.
Liu Kang is a much better main character, and I don't know why Liu Kang was in this Mortal Kombat, but not the main character. He was like a side character, even though he had the most story going on, which is very weird. What a weird choice.
The absolute disrespect both to Liu Kang and to Shaolin Kung Fu in general.
And also not enough Mortal Kombat-ing in that movie. They do maybe three rounds, four rounds maybe.
I want a Mortal Kombat movie. I want a manga adaptation of a Mortal Kombat movie that's just the tournament arc. Like, that should be a Mortal Kombat adaptation, right? You don't need the whole plot about... I mean, it doesn't need to be about finding a MacGuffin and chasing people through a city and Scorpion and Sub-Zero fighting in the background. Just have it be the tournament arc, right? Like, it's so easy. Anime does it all the time.
The funny thing is, you could also do all of that stuff. That is, it all fits in there as well, but it would be supplemental to the tournament arc, like we've seen in every single tournament arc manga. Or as I said earlier, the Tekken manga and anime and stuff. Like, there is lots of stuff going on.
Well, sure. I mean, you have to have a B team with a B plot, but like, you need to make the tournament fights the focus. Everything is going on around that central, you know, device, which is the tournament.
My only concern with making a movie tournament arc is that you're going to have to compress a lot of the tournament arc into that 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours, whereas a tournament arc really wants to breathe, you know?
Listen, hear me. Okay, hear me out. It's a trilogy, and the trilogy is all one tournament arc.
Well, that's ideal. That is your ideal scenario, right?
Yeah.
Is if you can nail the trilogy. But people aren't going to want to commit to an unproven movie. This first Mortal Kombat was the reboot back into this universe. So this was like they're really testing the waters to see if people are still interested in this. The same thing is going to happen to this new Street Fighter movie. Like, this is not a continuation of like that Chun-Li backstory movie that came out a little while ago. This is going to be yet another relaunch of Street Fighter.
Huh.
And we don't even know if this one is going to be a tournament. I know that Jason Momoa is probably going to play Blanca. I know that.
That?
Oh, that's a thing.
That feels...
I don't know if I like that. I think maybe that's bad.
Okay. Oh, and here we go. Got it. There is a Mortal Kombat manga adaptation.
Oh, yeah, of course there is.
Hell yeah. There's also a long-standing series of Mortal Kombat American comics published by DC.
Oh, yeah.
So if you ever want to see Sub-Zero fight Batman, that's out there.
Hell yeah, of course. Sub-Zero and Batman team up against Alien versus Predator.
Oh, man, that would be so fucking kick-ass.
That'd be pretty good, right?
Yeah, honestly, think about it that way. Japanese manga adaptations of video games have a long way to go before they catch up to that level of excellence. At that point, they're just doing a Smash Bros. They're banging their action figures together, which is, the optimal way to do this kind of thing, I think.
I mean, we have Marvel versus Capcom, and that new Marvel versus Capcom just got announced. Arc System Works is going to be making that one, which is pretty cool. I am interested in that. But that is really, I mean, I obviously am on the record here not super interested in Cape Comics and all this shit. The big two, just not really that interested in that stuff. I am deep in this manga hole, and I'll probably stay here for the rest of my life. But I am willing to admit the big advantage of American comics is that they can just mash all these people up, and they do it all the time.
Yeah, they just say anything goes, basically. They don't even have like an internal consistency guy.
Yeah, no, they don't even fucking care. They'll do multiple at the same time.
Hey, you want Marvel versus Capcom? Well, they got Marvel versus Capcom versus Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
There are so many Batman comics. If you pick a random, like, fictional character out of a hat, Batman has teamed up with them at some point.
Oh, sure. Batman's teamed up with Frankenstein, Dracula, all the big monsters.
Yeah, all the monsters.
Yeah. He's gone back in time and teamed up with Sherlock Holmes, obviously.
Two great detectives.
If it were the Bat manga, he would be a descendant of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, he fights the Yakuza, as we know.
Well, that is, you know, that is another upcoming one that I'm excited for. We got Bat Ninja Batman versus the Yakuza League.
You're excited for that one? Because you said you hated the last one. And I did not
like
it either.
I'm a forgiving guy. I believe in always giving people second chances.
You're ready for sexy anime girl Wonder Woman. You're all the way in.
Well, I can't say that I'm against it.
He's not going to deny it. As an off ramp here, I will say the last thing I was thinking about is because that Marvel versus Capcom announcement happened. People were posting about how much they like the new designs. And I saw somebody post the new Storm design going, wow, I really like the way that they've redesigned Storm. And it really, really struck a chord with me. Not a chord, maybe like a sore tooth, like hit me in a sore tooth, like really just shot my body with pain.
Struck a nerve.
Struck a rotting, awful nerve, because it is just generic anime girl wearing the Storm costume and her skin is a little bit darker.
Oh, no.
And people seem to enjoy this kind of thing. And it just dredged up that awful feeling I have constantly when I see these things where anime girls are all just the same. They're exactly the same every time you see them. They just have slightly different hair and costumes. Storm in particular is very egregious to me. I think this is why I had such a negatively visceral reaction, because Storm is one of the only black characters in all of X-Men. There are not a lot of black people in X-Men.
Not really.
You can kind of count them on one hand. And in this quote-unquote redesign, they basically completely annihilated her blackness, just nuked it from orbit. And people still will go out of their way to be like, wow, it looks great. No, it sucks. It sucks and is bad. And every time they do one of these generic anime girl makeovers on these comic characters, it's bad and it sucks.
Oof.
So I'd love to end on an incredibly negative note. But hey, fuck that. Fuck that redesign. It sucks.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that. You know what? Do that to Jubilee all you want. Do that to, I don't know, Psylocke, all you want. Who cares? Whatever.
It's weird that you named two Asian characters.
Psylocke is only Asian like half the time. Come on.
Oh, boy. Okay. I guess in conclusion, video games bad, read manga, right?
Yeah. I mean, manga's also bad, but yeah. At least it's
but
better
not
than
as bad
video
as video
games.
All right.
Yeah.
It's too hot here. Once again, it's summertime. I am going to go read this Mortal Kombat manga and make myself a watermelon margarita.
All right, all right.
Because that's
how
I do
it. Go and find that prequel Far Cry 3 manga and read about Voss's horrifying backstory. And then play the game again and burn that weed farm down.
Hell yeah.
Make that your weekend project.
I'm going to go listen to some Skrillex.
Fuck yeah.
All right, check out the socials, TikTok, Instagram. I'm putting stuff up on there. You're welcome. Do all the stuff that you're supposed to. And talk to you next time.
Bye. Bye. Remember from Borat? My wife. My wife. My name is Borat. I rent movies from Blockbuster.